You're joining the second hour of We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. And I guess if you joined us halfway through here, I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Bob does all our fun music. Bill and I just, you know, chatterbox. That's our job, to chatterbox. And our chatterboxing today is with Elaine Willman. She is the author of two terrific books that I think you ought to read. And let me make sure I get all the, whoops, I wasn't on the right spot on my webpage.
Elaine is our go-to Native American.
She is. She's got all of this federal Indian policy right at the tip of her fingers. Her first book is Going to Pieces, The Dismantling of the United States of America. Second book that just came out is Slumbering Thunder, a primer for confronting the spread of federal Indian policy and tribalism overwhelming America. And so if you don't live in the West and you don't deal with this stuff all the time, you might be thinking, what are these people all hysterical about? But I'll tell you, I attended a secret meeting. I found out about the secret on, I think it was Monday night, and the meeting was Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock up in Wairika. And you had 50 people at this secret meeting. The guy from the Bureau of Reclamation, top guy actually, told me that it wasn't a secret meeting. It was an informal meeting, except he had to buy a plane ticket to get there, and so did at least three other people in the room. I explained to him that informal meetings are where you run into someone in the grocery store and then you go have coffee. You don't buy plane tickets to informal meetings because that makes it a formal meeting. And how did 50 people find out about this informal meeting? Four tribes, a whole bunch of federal agencies, a bunch of environmental nonprofits, and it just so happened the only people who didn't get invited were the local congressional office and the Board of Supervisors for the county that was being impacted by the stuff they're talking about.
That's what's known as a congressional oversight.
It was a representative oversight. I mean, all the people who represented the people that were going to be affected were left off the list again. I mean, it's not the first time.
It was just an oversight.
This just goes on and on.
It was a big list to send out, and obviously people are going to get, forgotten. And, they'll do better next time.
And we were really casual about it. Here are our cards in case you've lost our contact information again. But it's crazy. So here these four tribes sat there, and at one point they were talking about making an agreement. They're working on an agreement about some of the different rivers and the watershed, blah, 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 along the Klamath. And the one river they were discussing has no available water. All of that water has been adjudicated. So it's owned by other people. So I couldn't, and I asked them, I said, how are you going to make an agreement about a river that has no available water for you? You're going to steal it? And, you know, everybody gets all itchy, you know, when you say stuff like that, which is obviously why I keep saying it. But it's true. Are they planning on stealing it? And I think they are, actually, if they can get away with it. One of the members from one of the tribes said, well, we don't understand why those people's water rights count at all. We don't consider them valid. We should be the ones controlling all the water, and we should be telling those farmers and ranchers how to manage their property up there. So, I mean, the federal government isn't the only one that's gone crazy. You know, I mean, Elaine, these tribes are obviously hook, line, and sinker, and they think that they are the boss of everyone.
Well, you're speaking of exactly what has occurred here with this horrible Water Settlement Act that we're trying to stop Congress from ratifying. When the reservations were opened and the allotment came out and Indians were given allotted parcels and became landowners themselves, with every Indian allotted parcel, there was an attached water right. And the same thing when the Homesteaders Act came on and the non-Indians moved into the reservations and had homesteaded parcels. Those parcels, those patents also had an attached water right to their patent. So the allotted lands had a patent with guaranteed water rights to that landowner and the homesteaded parcels, and that's probably the situation down there, too. So here in Montana, with this Water Settlement Act, those patents have been removed. Those water rights have been literally stolen, removed from those patents, and they're being transitioned into what we call tribal water allocations. Now, the tribe will tell those farmers and landowners how much water they can have. They've literally been stolen with the help of the state. I mean, absolutely with the help and the blessing of the state of Montana. Montana, the head of their DNRC, just a year or so ago, you know, concurrent with the work going on this water settlement, our state Department of Natural Resources sent 100 of their staff down to the tribal headquarters here on the Flathead for a two-day training on how the tribe wants the water managed. 100 of our state DNRC officials transported down to the headquarters of the Salish Kootenai to work out how they're going to do all this theft of Montana's waters and these private property rights, water rights that have been stolen. It's that serious. That's how serious it is. We have an attorney general here, Tim Fox. I'm sure he won't mind me bragging about his recent accomplishment, because he bragged about it. It was all over the front page of the Missoulian big ceremonial full-color pictures. You know, he was just recently adopted into the Crow Tribe as an honorary Crow Tribal member, our Montana Attorney General. And so his new name is Chief Spirit Runner. And he, in the big article announcing his adoption into the Crow Tribe, he's bragging about, now he's running for re-election this year, but when he was first elected, within the first 2 weeks as Montana's Attorney General, he took 50 of his state employees to this tribal headquarters to be sure that his state employees understood the relationship between the state of Montana and this tribe and the cultural significance and the importance. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
This state is slitting its own wrists as a state by just throwing everything, including jurisdiction and authority over state waters and theft of private property water rights, to the tribes. And it's illegal. It will ultimately be defeated, but it's going to take years through the courts to do that, and look at the damage that's going to occur before then. You know what I mean? So it's a very heavy issue, and we have, not only do the tribal governments collectively have some supreme power, but they have good friends, the environmentalists, the Agenda 21 folks. Within federal Indian policy regulations now, all the language of Agenda 21 is being put in there. If you look at the map of Agenda 2030 for the North American continent, there are no states on that map. It's regional,
right?
Nations regional.
And what is it? Six region? What are we? Six regions or seven?
I think it's ten.
Was it that big?
I could be wrong.
I just remember it was pretty small. I mean, it was a lot less than 50 states, obviously.
Yeah. The 50 states are gone, and it's now a United Nations regions within what used to be the United States. And amazingly, you know, I mean, just a few years ago for me, I thought all this stuff is just goofy. But the United Nations Indigenous Peoples Movement, the Agenda 2030, the collective power of the tribes in this country that want to be separate sovereigns under the United Nations, but the feds, we still have to keep funding them, of course. All of these partners are huge. These globalist partners are backing the play, and really, literally, these tribal governments are being used as pawns to facilitate the destruction of the country. And you can thank President Obama for lighting a big match to this.
Well, you start looking at, I mean, like just the meeting that I described for you before the break. You know, you have nobody from county government, so all the citizens of the county are not represented. You have no one there from the congressional office, so all of the people represented you know, same folks, but, you know,
all the federal lands.
You know, you've got none of that. But the Forest Service, that was how we found out what was really supposed to happen at that meeting, mm-hmm. because obviously when we showed up, it became a meeting where they talked about nothing. And did you watch Idiocracy yet?
Yeah, I walked into some of those where suddenly nothing's happening.
Yeah, suddenly nothing's happening. And, we'll play you, you know what, after one of these breaks, mm-hmm. I'll play you the clip from the movie Idiocracy where they talk about where they talk about Brando, because honest to God, that's what these meetings are like. They're crazy. And so here you've got 50 people, some of whom have flown across the country, and they talk about nothing because they really don't want the federal and county, and I suppose if anybody was there from the Assembly or the State Senate, they don't want them to know what they're up to. So,
yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting. They had
a huge video
presentation all geared up and ready to go. And then as soon as the meeting started, all the equipment quit working. And
they couldn't show any
of that.
No, they just didn't show it, which was funny. But the first secret meeting I went to about the Klamath Dams earlier this year, they started the slide presentation, and then a slide came up where it said they were creating a private entity. It was basically a shell corporation to manage the Klamath Dams in order to circumvent Congress. That's what the slide said, at which point, you know, Mr. Sheets threw himself on the projector and said that the slideshow was broken, which was classic.
In the program.
It was just funny. But we made a mental note. Next secret meeting, we need to show up late so they get into the swing of things. But honestly, you've got all these people who do not have the interest of the citizens or the private property rights of the citizens, and they're talking about how they're going to divvy up their stuff.
Their private property.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to tell them how to live their life on their land. Yeah. It's like, wow. That's the deal. Yeah. I mean, that's what the agencies are up to, and they're totally using the tribes to make it happen.
Yep. And as the tribes get that jurisdiction, your property rights are gone. Your civil rights are gone. Your constitutional protections under the state or federal constitution are gone. They're just gone when the jurisdiction becomes tribal. And the only remedy is through the courts. The Supreme Court is fixing a lot of this. We have powerful new rulings from the U.S. Supreme Court. But we can't get a governor or, we can't get county commissioners. We can't get anybody to pick up these rules and fight back.
Well, because this fits right into their, you know, I mean, we've got Moonbeam Brown here in California. You got Bisexual Brown up in Oregon.
Yeah,
and those governors are just thrilled, you know. Woohoo, we get to steal everything from all the private citizens. This is fabulous. And then we're going to make utopia, you know. We've got to take a really quick break. And that part went away kind of fast. We'll be right back. We are chatting with Elaine Willman about federal tribal policy and how that's affecting you, whether you think it is or not. It is. It's coming for you. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Now the Indians dressing up like cowboys, and the cowboys are putting leather and turquoise on, and the music is sold by lawyers, and the fools who fiddled in the middle of the station are gone.
That's one thing the Cherokees and the Irish have in common.
Oh, they're fiddle players.
Oh, I was thinking about the whiskey.
Oh, well.
The Welsh.
There you go, leave
it
not
to the,
Irish.
Leave it to the Welsh to lose focus.
Yeah. Going for the music.
Oh, my gosh. Elaine. So, I had Bob queued up the thing here for Brando. For those of you who don't know this movie, it's really a dumb movie. You can find it on Netflix. I think you can watch it online too. It's called Idiocracy, and I think it's from 2006, if I remember right. The guy that wrote it, it was just a spoof, kind of a, I don't know, not really science fiction, I guess, but it was like look into the future, and if everybody was dumber in the future than they are now, how would things be? Well, you know, I think we're going there. And he said he never actually thought it was going to be a prophecy. He thought it was just a spoof. So here's just like a little clip out of it. This Brando stuff is like a sports drink. And anyway, they have a meeting about it. And these are the meetings that we all get to go to. For those of you that are missing all these little meetings with the agencies and stuff as they talk about how nothing. They're going to take away your land rights.
And logic.
This is the logic that is used. Take it away, Bob.
What the hell is this?
Tastes like Gatorade.
Is that that Brando stuff?
They're watering crops with a sports drink?
Brondo the Thirst Mutilator had come to replace water virtually everywhere. Water, the basic component of all life, had been deemed a threat to Brondo's profit margin. The solution came during the budget crisis of 2330, when the Brondo Corporation simply bought the FDA and the FCC, enabling them to say, do, and sell anything they wanted.
That's Brando, the world being relabeled
Joe
with Brondo.
Didn't know any of this, but he did see a problem that he might actually be able to solve. With his options running out, Joe took a bold step. He would not get out of the way. This time, he would lead.
For the last time, I'm pretty sure what's killing the crops is this Brondo stuff.
The Brondo's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
So wait a minute. What you're saying is that you want us to put water on the crops?
Yes.
Water? Like out the toilet?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be out of the toilet, but yeah, that's the idea.
But Brondo's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
Okay, look. The plants aren't growing, so I'm pretty sure that the Brondo's not working. Now, I'm no botanist, but I do know that if you put water on plants, they grow.
Well, I've never seen no plants grow out of no toilet.
Hey, that's good. You sure you ain't the smartest guy in the world?
Yeah.
Okay, look, you want to solve this problem. I want to get my pardon, so why don't we just try it, okay? And not worry about what plants crave.
Brondo's got what plants crave.
Yeah, it's got electrolytes.
What are electrolytes? Do you even know?
It's what they use to make Brondo.
Yeah, but why do they use them to make Brondo?
Because Brondo's got electrolytes.
After several hours.
There you go. You've there now you been to every meeting I've ever attended.
Round and round and round.
It's not pretty, but unfortunately it's true. So, Elaine, have you been to those meetings too?
Yes, but, you know, I think we might have a bad connection again. Am I coming through?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. We can hear you fine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you mentioned that I'm gonna get that goofy movie and check it out.
It's hard to watch. It really is. I mean, it's really stupid. But
yeah,
when you
it
look
has
at
Luke Wilson in it,
yeah,
and Maya Rudolph.
Well, I'll tell you what, funny. it's a lot like real life right now. I mean, we're doing things that are crazy.
Yes.
You know,
it is. It goes right along with the dumbing down.
Oh, absolutely,
amazingly dumbed down.
Well, here, you know, the guys from the Native American guys that have been here for a long time, and the settlers that were here a long time have been here a long time. People in their 80s, they all say, "Gosh, you know, before the dams, the Klamath River ran dry in the summer, and all the fish died. We used to have to pile up the fish and burn them because they made the town smell so bad." But their, their kids and their children's children, their grandchildren, are running these tribes now, and they're telling everybody if we take the dams out, they'll have more water and more fish.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's not even circular logic because it's not even connected.
Speaking of logic, something that has troubled me is looking at the logic of all this. First, if you just look at our national population and every human being that lives in our country has certain needs, certainly water and power. That's what creates life in businesses or farms or wherever. And so when this water and power is all shifting away to a government that has no duty to, that's the problem. But there's a sort of a philosophical thing that really, or logic thing that really troubles me. And one is, we probably have thousands of ethnicities, cultures on the planet Earth. But there's one ethnicity on the whole planet Earth that honors Mother Earth. And that's the Native Americans. They're the only ones that honor Mother Earth. And that is a mantra that is rolled out and that people always just accept. You know, that no other, you know, certainly not farmers or ranchers or any other ethnicity honors Mother Earth like the American Indian. Of all the cultures on the planet, they're the only one. There's a problem with logic on that to me. And another thing that really troubles me, and I watched this happen up in Idaho, in northern Idaho, is that of all these thousands of cultures in our country and other countries, only the bones, the remains of the Native Americans are sacred. No other bones are sacred. Only the bones of Native Americans. These are the kinds of very illogical
That's true.
Premises. Very illogical premises upon which this shame and guilt and we were here first. Just, you know, when I hear we were here first, during the 14, 15, 1600s when countries were out conquering each other, I say, well, if you were here first, you're very fortunate we were here second. Because we didn't, you know, the pilgrims that came in, it took them 40 years to survive and settle Jamestown, and they didn't come here to conquer anybody. It's as though, all right, you were here first, we were here second, and it's a darn good thing for you because we didn't decimate you like conquerors were doing then. We're not studying you like the dinosaurs, as we would had any other conqueror come on this continent and planted a flag. You know what I mean?
Well, that's true.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, yeah. But we take a whooping because they were here first. Well, it went from 1789 forward, when the United States government was created, we're equal. We have the 14th equal protection. We're all equal Americans. And so what the heck does first matter? How about the child born this morning? Is he not equal to the American Indian? You know, it's that kind of illogic that is just foundational on this hoax. It really is. And it troubles me deeply, but, you know, I don't mean to be such a bummer or a downer, Debbie Downer here, but there is some good news coming that I'd also like to talk about.
Nice.
Oh.
Yes.
One of the things that has been slowly, it's taken a lot of research and a lot of the studies of legal cases and but now it's putting right under our nose. I want to talk about the Territorial War Powers Act for just a moment, because that was the War Powers Act that came up after the Civil War during the Reconstruction era when the country was trying to come back together after the Civil War. And it was used, the Territorial War Powers was put in place so that marshals could go on to plantations in the South and rescue slaves that had not been freed by their plantation owners, bring them up north, and free them. They set up the Freedmen's Bureau, Territorial War Powers, freed the slaves, brought them up north. But we were also settling the West then. And so the Freedmen's Bureau became the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and the Territorial War Powers Act was used in all the territories, Louisiana Purchase, Northwestern, all the territories. That was the governing authority that gave the federal government the right to execute treaties with the Indians and to essentially settle the West and create states. Once a state was created and had its statehood, the Federal War Powers Act was null and void, could never be used against the state. It was a free, separate, second priority sovereign in the Constitution. Federal War Powers Act cannot touch the state. It's only effective and legal in territories.
Hmm.
Now, a really interesting little thing. In our water compact settlement agreement, where the state has handed off all these waters in 11 western counties to this little tribe, on page 2 of this big set of water compact, there's a sentence in there that says the secretary's authority is under section, is authorized to do take these actions under 43 U.S.C. section 1457. 43 U.S.C. section 1457. That is the Territorial War Powers Act. That is the authority, that is the underlying federal authority being used to take the state's waters and give them to the tribe. And it's not legal. It's absolutely not legal. Another little example. The tribes, the gaming tribes especially, the tribes that are acquiring land on the open market, they certainly have that right to acquire land on the open market, but when they take that land and they ask the Bureau of Indian Affairs to place it into federal trust, the authority, without the approval of the state legislature, the authority for fee to trust, taking state property out of a state's tax base and putting it in a title to the United States on trust for the Indians, that authority is the Territorial War Powers Act, and it's not legal. So the good news coming is that our courts are now, we have cases in New York, in California, there'll be, ours coming from Montana is coming soon, there will be cases, and the United States Supreme Court is aware of this now. And again, I go back to Justice Clarence Thomas saying, where's your authority? There is no authority under the U.S. Constitution. There is no authority under the War Powers Act against states. And so I can actually hope in my lifetime that this horrible hoax on American taxpayers and this destruction of state authorities and protections and states that are willingly giving away their authority and their resources, that I can see the end of this. I can actually see the light at the end of this tunnel now, because of that foundational territorial war powers, which is being used to spread this tribalism as a governing system across the country.
Wow.
It took a lot of digging, a lot of trouble to find it, but it's coming soon. And, you know, a lot of these Indian attorneys and legal counsel, they're very worried about it. This has been a really lucrative lifestyle for decades.
Yeah, they should worry, huh?
Yeah, yeah. The problem is the states, our state governors, most of the state governors, and Congress won't fix this, but the courts will and can. And I think it's coming sooner than I had initially hoped.
Wouldn't that be a weird twist? The courts finally step in and, like, do a course correction, send us the right direction. We need to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with Elaine Willman in just a second and wrap up the hour with her. You can find all the good information about the show and when we're on and how to sponsor us and archives and all that jazz, wethepeopleradio.us.
be moving to Montana soon, just to raise me up a crop of dental floss. Raising it up, waxing it down, in a little white box that I can sell uptown. By myself, I wouldn't have no boss, but I'd be raising my lonely dental floss.
Raising my lonely dental floss.
Who is this?
That is Frank Zappa.
Oh, of course.
I wonder if he's my neighbor. I might be moving to Montana.
To raise some dental floss.
Your music, man, is just the best. Just the best.
That's better than here. They're all moving here to raise pot, so. Move to Montana. Dental floss doesn't smell. And there's no black market.
That's
okay,
wonderful.
So back to business.
Yeah. So we're a country 227 years old. I have a great grandchild who's 1 year old, and I really have a. This is moving so fast because of the triumvirate of the globalists, the United Nations, the Agenda 21, the One World Order people. All of whom are supporting and facilitating this spread and the like-minded goals of the tribal governments. I worry that when my great-grandchild is 21 years old, he may not even live in the United States. He really may not. If our citizens don't start stand up and raising hell, and our states don't start behaving as states, as the second powerful sovereignty in our Constitution, we're really at risk of being one of those marvelous countries with a unique republic form of government that is the prize on the planet and the primary target of these globalists. We may not have the United States in 21, 25 years or sooner.
No, it's definitely moving in that direction, isn't it?
It is, and actually this election is, it probably is. I mean, they've said this about many other elections, but I think this election is the turning point. We're either going to continue proceeding down this road, and we will lose this country, or we're going to hang on to this country for dear life, and this form of government, and the powerful sovereignty of its citizens. We have to hold on to this country for dear life because there's so many adversarial, powerful people that want us gone. They just want us gone.
Oh, sure. And really, even after this election, I mean, the fight is never going to be over. I mean, we're going to have to continually battle.
You're right.
Yeah.
That old expression, freedom isn't free.
No.
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh. You're absolutely right. The election, if we get the change we need to hold on tight to this country, it's like when the engineer puts the brake on the train, it doesn't just suddenly stop. There's forward momentum. There's a lot we're going to have to work through and work hard to hold on to over the coming years. And I guess that's where I wish more citizens that live here and that benefit from this beautiful country, I wish they had a deeper appreciation for what it would be like to live somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think, Elaine? What can people do? I mean, the people that are affected, obviously, that you know, live in areas where the tribes are trying to overreach on their water rights and on their property and all that. But like the guys up in Klamath, I guess. I was thinking about that before the break. There's an administrative law decision up there that gave the tribe, the Klamath tribe, time immemorial water rights.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
That's time immemorial and aboriginal rights they're myths. They're fictions. There are a couple of little outlier cases with a couple of Pueblo tribes in the Southwest who were initially under the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. There's a couple of little outlier cases that have provided tribes with aboriginal rights to some land. But you have to remember, you have to look at it this way. The entire North American and South American continent was aboriginal, absolutely aboriginal. The ancestral lands of all of these tribes was the entire North American continent and South American continent. You know, the game changed in 1789 when the United States government was formed. So this time immemorial stuff and aboriginal stuff is pre-constitutional. And you're hearing all kinds of talk these days about, wow, that's, we precede the federal government. We precede the United States. We have time immemorial rights. We have aboriginal ancestral lands. Well, no, you don't. Not since 1789. Anything pre-constitutional or extra-constitutional is unconstitutional. That's what I mean about holding on to this government, mm-hmm. holding on to this country. Because the movement, the ancestral rights, the aboriginal rights, the time immemorial, that's all coming from the United Nations, promoting these tribes to sing that song as loud as they can to the elected officials that they fund. And the current administration is putting jurisdictional legs under that stuff. The adversary is our executive branch. Our federal government is the adversary here. And that's a very harsh thing to say, but it is. It's not to break down this country. It's the people that we elect to serve us that are handing it over. And as citizens, we have to really be inquisitive with those we elect, those who are running for office. Where do you stand on this? How seriously do you believe and will you uphold the Constitution? What is your position on federal Indian policy? This is the best kept secret that nobody wants to talk about. It's too good a deal for the ones that are benefiting from it, but it's costing the taxpayers and American citizens our country. It really is.
Oh, and it's, I know everybody's heard it time and time again, but this also exemplifies how important it is, this election, as far as our Supreme
yes.
Court goes, because the Supreme Court's the only one standing between us and Armageddon right
you.
Now.
Thank you for mentioning that, because that's on the line. If we get any more liberal justices on the bench, Justice Thomas will be a lonely voice, and we're done.
And where
we're
do
done.
You think he wants to go with this?
You know, I think a lot of us have tried to figure out solutions. I don't know what solutions are. I really do cherish our American history, which is absolutely incorporated with American Indian history. And I have an affection for the noble Indian warriors, even old Geronimo. I just have a deep affection and respect for American Indian history and culture and traditions. And I do so deeply want to see those preserved by the Indian families, because they want to, not because they're paid to.
Do you think the Indian heritage and history is being rewritten to the extent that our American history is being rewritten?
Well, it's not only being rewritten, it's being entirely reversed. Absolutely reversed. I mean, the folks that settled Jamestown, and it took 40 years, so they did not come here as conquerors. They came here as pilgrims escaping a tyranny in Europe, and they came here for religious freedom. They didn't come here to wipe out the Indians. As a matter of fact, the Jamestown Massacre wiped out most of Jamestown. But you don't read about that. All of the skirmishes between tribes amongst each other, they were warring with each other constantly, and they still would be if it weren't for the treaties, or if it weren't for this whole system that says, hey, everybody, let's hang together and we'll all get this stuff. You know, when they're not mutually on the same goal, they fight amongst themselves. Tribes fight amongst each other quite seriously. So, you know, the answer, I like to look at the Amish. The Amish is a religious, it's a culture, it's a lifestyle, and it is one that has continued and preserved itself beautifully in the United States, in compliance with the Constitution, but they live and practice their daily culture and traditions the way they choose to, and nobody pays them to. You know, they're not going to the feds of the state saying, hey, we want to continue our Amish traditions. Well, any culture that wants to revere itself will. And those that don't, won't. It's that simple.
True.
It shouldn't require something equivalent to the defense budget for a culture to preserve itself.
Yeah, that's true.
They either do or they don't.
And the Amish is a really example. We've got about 10 minutes left. We've got to take one quick break, and then we will come back and finish up the top of the hour with our friend Elaine Willman. We're chatting about federal Indian policy. She's got a couple of great books. Slumbering Thunder is her most recent one, and you can find that on our website, wethepeopleradio.us.
They took the whole Cherokee Nation, put us on this reservation, took away our ways of life, the tomahawk and the bowie knife, took away our native tongue, and taught their English to our young.
Standing by the door, he fell in love with Indian maid or an antique store. Elijah Young, well, he stood there and said he never let it show. Hoped he could never answer yes or no, no, but no. Poor Rose Elijah never got a kiss.
There you go, Elaine. You got your favorite song in.
Get it. You get it. Well, it's a good thing we're not on Skype. when that bumper music comes on, I love Collider. It's my first awareness of listening to a radio station as a little girl. It was KREM in Spokane Valley. And Collider, come on, I just start bawling. I think I was 9 or 10 years old. I just couldn't stand it. Before old Collider. So, if I were on Skype, you'd see me up and dancing around on the bumper. You know,
another good reason.
I sort of have a childlike faith. You know, I really, really do. This is such a distressing and uncomfortable subject that I have been zoned in on for 25 years, but I have a fundamental spirit that somehow we will be all right, all is well, and things will come out okay. And when you look back at our country, I mean, look what all this country's been through just to become 227 years old.
Yeah.
And look what we've gone through on a day, you know, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We've just come through hell as a country, and I'm just kind of thinking somehow we will muddle through this. You know, somehow we will. We have to. So that's that little blind faith that.
Well, it's almost like a bad experiment we've gone through, and it's time to clear off the table and get back to what we truly believe. And you know, get things right
exactly.
Again. Yep. Do you catch a lot of grief from the Indian community from your books and speaking out?
You know, amazingly, I catch almost no disagreement or flack from tribal members. Or you know, as I said, I've lived 16 years on the Yakima Reservation, 8 years on the Oneida in Wisconsin, and I've been out here on the Flathead for over a year. I have very good tribal friends, and they just tell me stuff, and they can't speak up for themselves. So I get very little disagreement or flack from tribal members themselves. Where I do take the heat is what I call the Indian industry, you know, the lobbyists and
the
legal
government.
Council, the radicals that are just, you know, the elite industry, Indian industry itself, just calls me terrible names. I mean, they call me racist, KKK, Nazi, bigot. They call me all kinds of things, and I say, you know, have at it. You know, I honor my Indian ancestry. I so could worry about the quality of life of tribal families across the country. You know, my grandchildren are biracial. You know, most of our families are very diverse. Most of our American families are multicultural, and I think that's a good thing. Good thing. But these guys, you know, when I speak up about what's wrong with federal Indian policy, and I apparently am one of very few that do, they come after me. You can Google my name, and you'll find all kinds of, you'll find some good stuff, but you'll find some crap, too. But it's not coming from tribal families and tribal people. It's coming from these lobbyists and writers and the radicals that are pushing for more, more, more. Those folks don't have an America, they don't have a native language term for thank you or enough. I mean, we owe them forever. And it's just foolish. It's just foolish. So,
yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say it doesn't endear them to the rest of the people out there. Ooh, we have 30 seconds left. It actually isn't helping. I mean, it's a little bit like all of these divides that are being created. I'm more special than you. And so if you're in the not special category, you owe me, you owe me, you owe me.
Yes.
And what's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine.
Well, once we got into the business of reparations, you know, everybody came forward. So, Elaine, thank you very much for coming on with us today. It's been very enlightening.
I hope everybody will go on there and read the articles. They're excellent. And your latest in The New American was fabulous. If you don't have time for the whole book, read the article at least and listen to some of the interviews. I've posted all three of our previous shows on there. And you can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. We'll be back next week with something fun. Thanks a million, zillion, Elaine.
God bless you guys for having the courage to do these broadcasts on difficult subjects. I really value the courage that you guys display when you do these things. So thank you very, very much.
Thanks a bunch. We're just hiding behind and goofing around. Thanks, Elaine. Thanks, Bob. Bye all. See you next week.
Okay.
Thanks,
Take
Elaine.
Care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, Bill.
Bye, John Boy. Benny Ray is wife and family to say he loved them so. Then he told the other passengers, let's roll. Let's roll, America. There's a job to be done. Let's roll, America. There's a battle to be won. Wake up, America. You're too young to die. Let's roll.